Hello and welcome to the Leadership Hub, brought to you by Global Leadership Initiatives. GLI is a Canadian-based leadership development organization with over 22 world-class expert consultants who specialize in leadership, sustainability, management, coaching, and team development. GLI strives to create excellence in leadership globally by offering individuals and organizations holistic tools and programs that enable them to develop their leadership and their business capacity. For more information on our programs and services, visit www.globalleader.ca. Now, let's dive into today's episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Leadership Hub. I'm your host, Megan Peacock, and today we have two co-authors from a chapter of GLI's latest book, which is dropping in the next couple of months. It is titled African Leadership, Powerful Paradigms for the 21st Century. And the co-authors joining me today are Dr. Pierre Balamu and Dr. Paul Sachs. Dr. Pierre Balamu is a medical doctor with a master's in health program management, and he also has 13 years experience working in public health. Dr. Paul Sachs has his PhD in clinical psychology, and he is also board certified in rehabilitation psychology. He has an MBA, and he has also been a practitioner in the mental health and substance use space, as well as serving as a leader, an executive leader in the nonprofit space for individuals who suffer from mental health and substance use issues. So, Dr. Balamu, Dr. Sachs, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Megan.
Thank you.
It is a pleasure to participate in this podcast.
Absolutely. It's great to have you guys on. So I'm going to dive in with a quote from your chapter, which touches on healthcare leadership and the topic of healthcare leadership. And the quote reads, "Overall, healthcare leadership presents unique challenges. In common with leaders of other industries, healthcare leaders must inspire others, create a sense of purpose, make difficult decisions, and collaborate with a range of people. But because their focus is on complex systems that aim to improve people's physical and mental well-being, expectations of healthcare leaders are especially high. Their work can be a matter of life or death. And for the leader in an under-resourced area, the challenge and expectations are even higher, particularly in the face of new and emerging health threats." So this quote, I feel, really sums up the chapter. And I want to touch on the first line where it says that healthcare leadership presents unique challenges. So I was wondering, Pierre, if you could tell me, what are the unique aspects of healthcare leadership that you guys touch on in your chapter?
Thank you, Megan. First of all, it is important to notice that there are unique characteristics of healthcare leadership compared to other areas, in the sense that the healthcare leader operates within the health system. That is very important. And understanding a health system is key to understanding healthcare leadership. Our suggestion of these healthcare leadership elements include sensitivity, teamwork, time frame and impact, as well as the culture. The sensitivity is all about the fact that the healthcare industry is vital in dealing with life and death issue and situation. And the care of people's body and minds is most intimate type of care that we can offer to another person.
Absolutely.
And these personal elements of healthcare creates a more accurate expectation of healthcare leader than other leader in other area.
Mm-hmm.
And the teamwork is in the sense that healthcare team member are unique in including various individuals with extensive specialized skills and knowledge, and who are also highly esteemed by the public in general. For example, when talking about the physician, as we know. So therefore, the healthcare leader must gain the confidence and the loyalty of the physician in order to succeed in leading them and the whole healthcare system. The other aspect is the time frame and impact, which is very important, as those elements involve the continuity of care across the continuum of recovery, and the impact of healthcare is almost felt in area of aspect of society, as we know. And if people are not well, for example, they cannot bear and raise children, they cannot work and contribute to the economics and the well-being of the entire society. The fourth element is about the culture, which is very, very important, as historically, healthcare has been provided by the family, for example, and the community, and which is not seen in other area, for example, as in manufacturing, for example, or providing in service in industry. They don't have family and community components. That is one aspect of healthcare leadership. And no one, for example, can expect the family member of the manufacturer to be providing those services at home, for example, like it is in healthcare, because that human component, like the family involvement and the role that the community play in providing the healthcare, is very important when talking about healthcare leadership. And leader in healthcare, for example, they must be able to connect with the family and the entire community in order to be successful in leading in improving the health of the society or leading in their leadership role.
Absolutely. I like how you've given that example of manufacturing. When you put it in those words, you realize how crazy it would be to anticipate, you know, the family member of someone who works in manufacturing to go and just step in and take that job. But when it comes to healthcare, it's such an intimate part of our societies, of our families. And in every system, there's a different approach to healthcare. There's a different set of beliefs around healthcare and how that's carried out. And that kind of reminds me of systems thinking, because the system in which healthcare operates is so important. And there's this great quote from the book where you guys say that the key to effective healthcare leadership is systems thinking, which is kind of what you've been touching on. And the quote continues, which involves looking at the entire system of care as an integrated whole rather than discrete parts that operate in isolation. And I was wondering if you could tell our listeners, what is systems thinking and how can people better utilize systems thinking in their leadership, not only in healthcare leadership, where you just helped us see how important systems thinking is, but for any kind of leadership, what is systems thinking and how can we better utilize it?
So, yes, I think it's great that Pierre used the example of family, because the family is a perfect example of a system and systems thinking. And what we mean, for example, is that you have members of the family. You may have parents, you have children, grandparents, extended family. But you really don't understand the family if you look at each of those people individually. You have to understand the family as they operate as a whole. And another example that I use, if you wanted to learn how to a motor vehicle works, you could take the engine apart and you could name all of the parts in it, but you're not going to be able to figure out what's going on with that car or truck until you actually see it in operation. So when we talk about systems thinking, we're talking about looking at systems as operating together. And likewise, as we've seen lately, related to the changes that have occurred due to the pandemic, we see how many different systems are interacting or not interacting with each other. So one must take that sort of global approach to looking at it, realizing that the system or the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And certainly that's true in a healthcare arrangement.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think taking that bird's eye view of any system is a really helpful thing for leaders, especially when you have challenges that you're coming up against. It can be easy to focus in on the part that's not performing the way you anticipate it to. But when you zoom out and you realize that the parts interact as part of a whole, it kind of opens up a whole new range of solutions on a system level.
And I'd like to just add one other point to remember when we take systems thinking that when you observe the system, you become part of the system. So that's the challenge of the healthcare leader, that they are part of the system, and yet they need to step back and help the system. So simply observing something changes it. And it's a very challenging but important role to take for the healthcare leader.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like that distinction of how you say that observing itself changes the system. That's an important thing to remember. That leads me to my next question, because one of the extremely important contexts in which healthcare unfolds, we often think of it as a medical phenomenon, but you draw a distinction in the book where you highlight the fact that healthcare crises are not necessarily medical phenomena alone, but they're also a social phenomena, and that understanding a health system and the social context in which that health system operates is key to understanding healthcare leadership. So my question is, how does healthcare leadership teach an important lesson about being aware of the social context in which leadership unfolds?
Yes. So again, as we've seen in our current time, that medical problems do not limit themselves to just medical conditions and physiological reactions, but they have ramifications across all aspects of society. And that's certainly true historically also when we look at pandemics from the past as well as other healthcare problems. So we want to understand the social elements. And a key element for a healthcare leader is to look at what we in some circles call the social determinants of health. For example, poverty. It is not a medical problem, but it is a social determinant that has a significant impact on one's health. And therefore, when we look at a healthcare situation or a challenge, we need to consider all of the social determinants, as well as wealth, as well as other social aspects, education, environment, and so forth. So that's, again, part of the systems thinking, but also part of understanding that the excitement about doing healthcare leadership, as well as the challenge, is that it allows one to look at a range of things and also to have one's interventions have multiple impacts.
Absolutely. And that's so powerful too, when you think of a leader in any context, to consider what are the social determinants of the context that you're leading in, because that, you know, it helps you to have that sensitivity to the people that you're leading, because leadership as well in healthcare and in any sector, it's not really a matter of only dealing with the aspects of that sector alone. It's a social phenomena that takes place. So I love how you mentioned the social determinants of health, or it could be, you know, the social determinants of leadership or followership. It could apply to a lot of different spheres. So this takes me to a question you mentioned, you know, in our current times, and we've kind of used the terminology of the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, and another huge pandemic that is not so far back in our history is the Ebola pandemic. And so crisis is a really, it's an important time for healthcare leadership. Healthcare leadership in times of health crises becomes imperative. So what leadership lessons on responding to crisis can we draw from the Ebola pandemic and even the more recent COVID-19 pandemic? Because I think response to crisis and the tools that come out of that, they are applicable to healthcare crises, but they are also transferable lessons that we can learn.
Yeah, this is a very important question, as the memory of the 2014 Ebola crisis is still in the mind of people, especially in West Africa and globally. And also, we have been in the COVID-19 pandemic since 2020. And we have learned a lot of lessons that I wanted just to emphasize on two. The first lesson we learn is that communities and local leaders are a central to routine service delivery, and also to the emergency preparedness and control, which can enhance the health system responsiveness. Secondly, the second lesson is we learn that localization of healthcare knowledge and international standard and policy by adapting them to the local context is very crucial to improving the buy-in by local actors, for example, because those knowledge or standard are no longer being seen that as like outside of the community or the country, or be imposed by external entity, for example, but rather as integral of the local health service, and also the actor involved in the process being central of determining what element, what approaches, and how to implement and monitor them is very important. And the current COVID-19 pandemic, for example, from Africa or globally, we have seen how people are reluctant to take in the vaccine, for example. A lot of resources has been invested in procuring those vaccines. But one aspect is that they need to understand how it operates. They need to be part of the decision-making body, for example, to procure those vaccines, to determine how the way that those vaccines can be delivered up to the last mile in the community.
Yeah, that's such an important lesson. You kind of touched on two components of successful change management or change leadership, rather, is that there needs to be an understanding. That's the cognitive component. Why is this intervention necessary? Why do I need this from a cognitive perspective? But then you've also touched on something that is so crucial that is often forgotten in change leadership, is the emotional or the psychological component of feeling safe through the change process, feeling that sense of psychological buy-in. And you mentioned how people need to be part of the decision-making process so that they don't feel that it's being imposed externally. And there's this great phrase that you use in the book that sums this up, is that leaders need to gain local credibility if interventions are going to be successful. So I wonder if, Paul, you can touch on change leadership and how that ties into crisis intervention.
Yes. So I think that, first of all, I like to use the phrase that the change is continual. As compared to some who say change is constant, they are both correct. But things continually change, and we have to have that mindset. And you see this now in certain communications that we see in the world that, okay, it's COVID-19 now, but something else is coming along too. Every day is a change from the day before, for that matter, every hour to hour. So keeping that in mind and not thinking that everything is going to stay fine and okay, now we got this settled and now we can just sit still and we don't have to go forward. Oh, no, no, no. Everything else is moving ahead and you either join or you can be left behind. So I think that's an important mindset to have. It's challenging though, because it is confusing at times and sometimes threatening. So you want to keep in mind that everybody changes at different paces. If we think about, for example, the process of grief, which is a very important process to help one move forward, everybody does not proceed at the same pace. There are no rules. Yes, there are stages that people write about, but everything is different and every person's reaction is different based on their experience. Likewise, communities that have accomplishments or losses, they need to be, we need to understand what is the proper pace. And this speaks to what Pierre is talking about, understanding the local culture, having credibility to be able to help people to put their experience into context. And I also think that's an important thing too, to validate people's feelings, that it is important to recognize, sure, change is very scary sometimes and exciting and threatening, but it is also validating that everybody feels that way and people get through this. If we have thousands of years of human history to show that we can. So that kind of support, I think, is an important element for a healthcare leader to communicate when they are with and part of a local community.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like the piece that you've touched on there about validating people's feelings, because that is a really powerful way for the leader to connect in any circumstance, in any situation, to connect with the people who you're asking to buy into an intervention or a proposed change. Is that, yeah, we need to validate people's feelings around change being scary or difficult. That kind of leads me to my next question around, you mentioned how every community might have different feelings towards change, how people change at a different pace, or possibly there are even communities who are incredibly receptive to change. So having closely examined healthcare leadership in places where material resources are scarce, what are some of the intangible resources that leaders can tap into in resource-scarce environments? And when I say intangible resources, I'm thinking things like social or human capital, collaboration, innovation, creativity. What are some of the ways that you can tap into those resources to make innovation, to make change more viable and more sustainable?
Thank you, Megan. That question is very important. And one thing to notice and to bear in mind is that no matter the resource limitation, external resources cannot replace local resources. Every community and social entity is endowed with knowledge, human capital, and those resources need to be leveraged with external support, for example, and then building local capacity, developing local human resources. Like we have seen, for example, how many people were deployed in West Africa during the Ebola crisis. A lot of them actually learned on the ground when they were in Guinea. And the presence of such high number of people can create or can deliver another signal rather than being around for help, for example. And the role that the local entity or local actor can play, for example, in preventing disease or controlling disease is very important. That can be, that resources or capacity can be developed in the way that ensure the continuity of the actions that community local actors can adopt or be deploying for continued improvement of healthcare system or health service, for example. One other thing is collaborations. We know that the boundary of health system is difficult to indicate. Health system has a great social component that no matter the country, whether a low-income country or high-income country, every health system in the around the world have a great social component that need to be developed, that need to be involved in every process leading to improve the health of a nation, the health of the community. And the design thinking, for example, we have seen the important role of one health approach, for example, where people from diverse sector, multicultural resources, human capital can collaborate, working together to identify the determinant of emerging disease, and then developing a mutual action plan to be implemented in order to control or to reinforce the health system, for example. And also, we talk about the sense of urgency, and which is like helping people to understand or to be able to cope with what is not expected. Like we were from in 2020, for example, with the memory of the Ebola crisis, no one around the globe were expecting, for example, the COVID-19 pandemic. But people need to be applying what we learn from a situation, from previous situation, what lesson or what can we improve to be able to address future actions or future non-plan event, for example.
Yeah, I love how you speak about reinforcing the capacity of communities to respond to healthcare crises. And Paul, that's something you mentioned. You really, before we started talking, you gave this really helpful reframe to move away from the terminology intangible resources and introduce this idea of natural supports. And that's something that Pierre has been talking about. So can you, for our listeners, can you explain the idea of natural supports and how that is such an important focus for healthcare leaders?
Sure. And yes, I was thinking about that when Pierre was speaking about the local leaders and so forth. It's common when we think about healthcare, although I might argue that this is more of a Western European approach to healthcare than an African approach, that we think about institutions, we think about hospitals, we think about clinics, we think about professionals. And those are very important supports for sure in healthcare. But anybody in any aspect of their life also has natural supports that are part of their daily life. And particularly given the general larger sense of community or the more prominence of community in African cultures, this is very important. So when we talk about ways to help people manage a crisis, we want to also look at what natural supports they have. Who are there, for example, faith-based leaders? Who are the key members of their family? Who is the person that they are most likely to go to first to talk to a problem? Chances are, it's not going to be a medical doctor. It's going to be some person who has authority or has their respect and is the person that is receptive. There's that very wonderful program, I believe it's in Zimbabwe, the grandmothers on the benches who sit and talk to or are available to talk to people in the community. And there's, you know, some similar projects throughout the world. And I think that that's exactly what we're talking about when we talk about natural supports. We have to have a very open house to all sorts of ways that people can be supported and use those tools effectively.
Absolutely. And that's such a powerful lesson for leadership in any circumstance, really, because sometimes I feel like we get so tied up in the idea of the heroic leader who has to do everything themselves. They have to know everything. They have to make all the tough calls. They have to sort of see into the future. And if there's anything that we've learned in the last couple of years with, you know, all of the changes we've experienced and the different crises that we've gone through globally, is that it's impossible for any one person to anticipate what's coming around the corner. And in light of that, it's so important to allow leadership to emerge, to allow creative solutions to emerge in unexpected places and at unexpected times. And natural supports are one of the ways that we can do that whenever you're facing a problem, to ask yourself, what are the natural supports that already exist that maybe I'm overlooking because of a bias that I have? And how can these natural supports help me solve this problem more collaboratively, more creatively, and perhaps even more empathetically to the community in which this problem exists? So I touched on the role of the leader as the kind of hero leader, and there are many different roles that leaders play. And in your chapter, you identify the various roles that a leader plays in healthcare specifically. And these roles are a model, a filter, a stakeholder, a representative, and a motivator. So Pierre, I was wondering if you can help me understand, why are these roles so important in healthcare leadership, and what purpose do they serve?
Okay, this role, as we mentioned, are very important in the sense that people really need to understand before they can change. Mm-hmm. And one thing to remember is change is very difficult under pressure or during the pandemic or epidemic, for example. That is why we emphasize on this role that healthcare leaders should play in order to prepare people. Like modeling, for example, is very important. Like we were dealing with the Ebola crisis, and the director of the National Agency for Health Security, they were, and the Minister of Health, for example, they were the first to take the Ebola vaccine. That is very important, so that the message is that they are telling the community member or people who don't understand how the vaccine is manufactured or produced, that it is to make to help people rather than making harm, for example. It is not against someone, but it is to help people. And then filtering is very important, as we still, WHO, for example, actually call it like infodemic. People really disseminate the wrong information about the disease, about how to control disease, like Ebola, for example, or the COVID-19 pandemic. But the role of leader is to filter which messages they can convey to the general public, for example, in order to prepare them, to capacitate them, to motivate them to take action and to control their own role, rather than creating panic, for example. And we have seen that in many communities. When we talk about healthcare leadership, it's not just like people sitting at the Ministry of Health, but in a rural community, for example, the head of the facility, rural facility, health clinic, for example, is also a leader. And he can be the only one who provide the healthcare and also organize the service and also motivate also his team member. And that is like the role of stakeholder that healthcare leaders should play. And they also can be the representative in the sense that they are from the community. They can be like appointed to serve their own community. And also they need to engage people in and motivate them to understand the implication or the determinant of disease and how to address them in the long term, for example. And we also emphasize that this is all about like building the capacity so that a local actor can become the key player in improving their own health, the health of their community, and the health of the nation in general.
Absolutely. As I'm hearing you go through all these crucial roles of a healthcare leader, the thing that's going through my mind is just, wow, that is such an important role that they play. It's the impact of how healthcare leaders engage with their job really, it does, like you say, it reverberates out across a nation even. And that is, I can imagine, such a heavy weight to bear, an important weight, but a heavy weight. So with given that the expectation on healthcare leaders is so massive, how would you recommend that healthcare leaders, and we're switching gears here now from speaking how healthcare leaders can better serve their community, we're switching gears to something that I think is so important, is how can healthcare leaders make sure that they are taking care of themselves? How would you recommend that healthcare leaders build the resilience necessary to protect their own mental and physical health in such a high stakes arena?
So you're touching on a very important topic of resilience in general, because we need to continue to look at how to build resilience in all sorts of aspects of society at all levels. And why do some people survive? Why do some thrive? And why do some fall back? It's just telling our audience, if you're looking for something more to research, that's a great topic. In terms of the healthcare leader, it's recognizing that you are not alone, nor could you be alone. And you are not going to be able to handle all of this yourself. And therefore, the best way to build your resilience is to surround yourself with a diverse group of people with whom you have confidence and trust, and who are willing to point out things about yourself and your actions that you may not have noticed. Because of course, you're not going to notice everything. And those leaders that have that cohort of colleagues and peers that can do that, I believe, are more resilient. And those who do not have it ought to seek it out. And related to what we said about natural supports, we're not just talking about other healthcare practitioners or even nurses or even other quote unquote leaders. We're talking about anybody who connects to you, which includes friendships and other social relationships. So I think that's one key important thing. The other is to continue to hold oneself to high standards, to try to achieve more, but recognize that to accomplish that, one needs to break it down into steps, that one is not going to achieve a very high goal successfully by taking it all in one step, but rather to try to look more long-term. Sometimes day-to-day circumstances do not allow us to look long-term, or at least they obscure the long-term, but they should not cause us to ignore it. So keeping in mind the long-term goal of what one is striving towards is also, I think, an important part of resilience.
Absolutely. That, I think, helps us to make sure that we're pursuing it sustainably, which I can imagine in a healthcare setting is incredibly important, to make sure that you are being mindful of sustainability. Pierre, what would be your recommendation to healthcare leaders? How would you recommend that they build the resilience necessary to operate healthily in such a high stakes arena?
One of the recommendation is first to notice that health is a complex issue and it cannot be approached or addressed by a one-size-fits-all approach. There are various resources beyond the health sector. In the education system, for example, or the social worker, for example, have a greater role to play, and healthcare leader needs to reach out those people or those resources in order to leverage the limited resources available to health. And it is also about building the capacity of people in the long term, for example. Health is always influenced by the out of sight, out of mind approach. The Ebola crisis, for example, when we were out of Ebola crisis, by 2020, we have forgotten what we implemented or what we learned. And that is like a great lesson for healthcare leader to learn or to lean in when developing the capacity of the people, that this is a continuous process. And they are not alone, because we are not to reinvent the wheel, but a lot of resources and approaches can be adapted to local context, for example, especially when we talk about the localization. It is difficult, for example, to when we are imposed, every policy is developed in a context, a particular context. No matter the success of that policy, it cannot be a one-size-fits-all approach. Maybe the context is different from another country, for example, that can be a barrier to the implementation of that policy. That is why we talk about the localization of approach, of standard, of knowledge, which can be incorporated in local resources so that people can learn, so that people can feel themselves they are part of something, that they contribute to develop, that they contribute to implement, and that they contribute to monitor. Learning is very important to build a resilience of healthcare system and also healthcare leadership.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like how you mentioned that, you know, we really do have all the lessons in the past if we would just be mindful of them. The information really is there if we would look. And also something that comes to mind as you speak about how systems can become more resilient when they focus on their own particular challenges and reinforcing their own particular weaknesses is that even individually, the ways that we build resilience will differ. Because as Paul mentioned, the importance of having people around you who can highlight your own particular weaknesses, our strategy for building resilience becomes as particular and as specific as our own weaknesses and challenges are. And so that's also a really important piece to building resilience into our lives and into healthcare systems and as leaders. So I'm going to take us to our last question for this conversation. And obviously this is part of a series, the Afghan Leadership series, where we speak to all the authors who've contributed to this incredible book. And the purpose of the book is to deliver the incredible lessons that we can learn from African leadership to develop greater leadership skills. The purpose of the book is to take those lessons that we learn from African leadership and to make them readily available for leaders from every context. And so the question that I want to ask each of you in closing, having written this book, having studied African leadership, is what is the lesson the key lesson, the most important lesson, the golden thread for you, if you will, that you draw out of African leadership?
Thank you for the question. One thing to I will say is that there is no one definition of leadership, as you know. And as I mentioned, that leadership has like various levels. And too often, when we talk about leadership or leader, many people think about those people who has the responsibility of leading the department or minister. But leader can also be at community level, especially talking in health, for example. We have seen that many areas of public health, especially nutrition, has been improved by the contribution of local doctors who actually model and share their experience in terms of breastfeeding or also hand washing and also cleaning water with local resources. And this is very important when you talk about the definition of leadership. It is all about the people who influence other, the people who initiate the learning process, the people who share resources, and who push other people to learn from the past, for example, experience, and who are able to keep the memory of what we learn from past action, for example. The people who can teach order, and the people who can share or model difficult practice, like I mentioned that the Minister of Health, for example, taking the Ebola vaccine publicly, and the people who also can address, like share the compassion, especially during the Ebola crisis, when health worker, for example, enter in a family with loss of people, for example. One of the lessons we learn is like when you enter people at the initial action, people were focused on the disease and dead body. Who is dead? Okay, no one can touch it. We are here to we can do everything. No, it is all about sharing the difficult situation of people. It is people, it is one person, a mother or father who have died. They are crying, and you need to share that, to share their situation, and then show them you are here to help them, rather than seeing them like a dangerous people who can contaminate other people. That is leadership. You share the situation of people, and you also see yourself as part of the problem, and also see yourself as part of the people who can struggle to find the solution, who can support people who are suffering, and who can also motivate the other people to work under pressure with limited resources.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so hear you correctly, Pierre. You're saying that the lesson you draw from African leadership is that leadership above all must be people-centric. It must be empathetic. It must be focused on those that you serve.
Yeah.
Well, what is the lesson that you draw out of African leadership?
I think that it carries over from what Pierre has said, which is that, again, speaking as an American, that African cultures and therefore the ways that people behave are very interconnected and communal. And that's a very prominent thing. And that connectivity, as opposed to isolation, is a critical value and action that an African leader, based on their experience, whether at the diaspora or in Africa, carries that others do not. And which is why it's so wonderful over these 8 years that Pierre and I have had our relationship and dialogue, because we also complement each other that way. And that is something that I draw from my experience working with him. So that would be my comment about the what African leadership brings to the world and needs to continue to, and I am hopeful will continue to grow in prominence, so that that interconnectivity is recognized and valued and celebrated for future leaders.
Absolutely. That's such a powerful lesson. Well, I want to thank you both for sharing all of your insights from this incredible chapter that you have collaborated on. And I want to thank you for just taking the time to speak with me today. It's been a really insightful conversation.
Thank you, Megan.
Thank you, Megan.
Conversation.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Leadership Hub. Don't forget to follow Global Leadership Initiatives on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. And we'll see you next time.